he subpoenaed me, you know, he said, and I feel like I'm going to lose 10 pounds.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. It is July 3rd. That means it's the day before July 4th. We're going to try to get through this agenda this evening while it's still July 3rd.
Trying to make them weep.
I'm opening a work session on a number of Senate bills and House bills. The first is Senate Bill 20A relating to federal education law. It's a conflict amendment. Senator Thompson, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 20 makes changes to Oregon law to conform with the recently passed Federal Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means previously approved this bill and has passed the Senate. The Dash A6 amendment resolves conflicts with House Bill 2314. Senate Bill 20 affirms a federal law making a modified diploma equivalent to a high school diploma. House Bill 2314 set minimum standards for graduation from specific trade schools, and this conflict amendment adds the modified diploma to the minimum standards. I recommend Senate Bill 20 be amended by the Dash A6 conflict amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Senate Bill 229B, relating to elections, Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 229 makes numerous changes to election law. These changes have a minimal fiscal impact to the Secretary of State or counties. The bill provides if House Bill 2391 is referred by voters by referendum petition, a special election on the question will be held on January 23rd, 2018. Absent this provision, the question would be decided on the November 2018 general election ballot. The fiscal impact of the potential special election is indeterminate. The Secretary of State budget, however, does not include funding for a special election. If a special election is held, the Secretary of State will request funds to cover the cost, either during the 2018 session or from the emergency board following that session after the election costs are known. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 229 be amended by the Dash B14 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion? Senator Hanson.
I guess my basic question is, why are we doing this? Why January instead of November?
Say what you said?
Probably won't get a real
answer. The bill in question that could be referred is the provider tax bill. If it is referred in its entirety, then our budget will be so unbalanced that we will need to actually come in February, and probably our major task during that session will be trying to figure out some way, should it be referred and the voters actually reject the measure that's referred, we will need to figure out a way to rebalance the budget.
Follow up.
Yes.
If they rejected it in November, what difference does it make?
I think the question will be, and we didn't have this, once it is referred, I would believe that there would be a very good possibility you could not collect the additional taxes that are in it. So you would be out of balance.
Either way.
Once it's been referred, you can no longer collect the taxes. Once the referral has been perfected.
Okay, but again, what difference does it make if it's November or January for the election?
Because your budget, if it's in January, then you come in and February and rebalance, and you just have a few months. If it's in November, then you no longer have the funds. And to be quite honest, I do not know how you would balance the budget without those funds. So I think we need to know where the voters are as soon as possible on this. And yes.
Senator Robin.
But explain, which November ballot would it be on?
November 2018.
Not the
so
November.
So we would have been spending for an additional 10 months.
It would be the following.
I thought it was November of this year.
No. Yes.
The point is, you would have been spending for an additional 10 months or so. Spending a lot of money.
Because it's if I may ask myself. Yeah. My understanding is that it won't be ready to be on the November. It won't be done in time to be on the November ballot for this year. It'll have to wait till the November ballot of the following year. and that puts us at a real disadvantage when we've got to have a conversation about it.
Senator,
being a former vice chair of rules in the House and a former chair of rules in the Senate, normal referral periods would be to November of the general election. So we wouldn't actually know the result until the 2018 November ballot. It would never normally be referred to the November election this year.
Did not the driver's bill license, the permit bill a few years ago was in November, the immediately following, I think.
That is because the legislature adopted a measure to put it on that ballot.
This is just emergency.
Thank you. Other discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm deeply conflicted by this bill. Intellectually, I understand it completely. I have some concerns about it, and I'm going to provide a courtesy yesterday and allow myself to have a little bit more time to reflect on it. I understand now it has been changed significantly to speak only to the question of the provider tax, but I will be a courtesy yes today with the right to change my vote on the floor.
Thank you. Senator Hansel.
Having heard what I just heard, too, I will follow suit with Senator Johnson via a courtesy yesterday, but reserve my right tomorrow.
Thank you. Additional discussion.
Are we still on 229? Mm-hmm.
Objections? Mm-hmm. Representative McLean, Huffman, Senators Winters, Girard, Thompson, and DeBoer.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. Senate Bill 644A relating to mineral resources. Senator Girard.
Oh, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 644 defines the term significant mineral resource site and stipulates that for the purpose of obtaining a county approval of any application for a land use permit, mining activities on such site that is located on land zoned for exclusive farm use in Baker, Grant, Harney, Lake, Malheur, Union, and Wallawa. Thank you.
Wallawa.
My eyes aren't doing so good. Counties is not subject to conformity with any statewide land use planning goal or administrative rule with exceptions. The measure requires that a project coordinating committee must be activated by the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries upon receipt of an application for an operating permit to mine on a significant mineral resource site for the purpose of addressing conflicts identified by private landowners within operations impact area. The measure further stipulates conditions and requirements for permitting of mining and activities of these sites by Dogami, including amending permits to conform with subsequently issued federal, state, and local permits. Notice of permit application and comment solicitation for cooperating federal and state agencies. Inclusion of provisions to address conflicts between mining operation, agricultural activities, and concerns addressed by the coordinating committee. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 644 be amended by the -A8 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion. Objections. Motion passes. Senate Bill 1032A relating to the Oregon Promise Program. Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 1032 removes the $10 million annual limit on Oregon Promise Program grants. The bill also provides exemptions to the requirement that a student must enroll within 6 months of high school graduation for National Guard members and others who meet specific criteria. The bill provides flexibility to the HEC, Higher Education Coordinating Commission, to limit eligibility when HEC determines that funding for the program is insufficient to to cover all prospective participants. That could alter the earned family contribution requirements to limit the number of participants. Your Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 1032 be amended by the A4 amendment and be reported out to pass as amended.
Discussion. Senator Johnson.
I think this is a good bill, and I'm going to support it, but it gives me a sense of time travel backwards when we voted on the floor about whether or not 10 was going to be adequate, and promises were made all around that 10 would be the top. I'm glad that it's oversubscribed. I'm glad that kids are going to college, but it's how our ends don't know our beginnings in this building.
Along that line, the only other state that had done it, Kentucky or Tennessee, had didn't have the same reaction that ours did. We, from one semester to the other, we had 90% continue on, and in theirs it was about 78%. So there are some things that prior experience would not have led us to believe were going to happen in Oregon. But I think because of some extra money that we came up with to help introduce those kids to college and help them stay with it, we had a much better return. And I agree with you. I'm happy we had the problem. I feel bad that we didn't have the right amount of money and we have to deal with that. But the program has proved much more successful for our kids than it has in other parts of the state, in a large part because of, I think, a good investment we made in helping them stay in school.
Additional discussion? Objections? Motion passes. House Bill 2038A relating to school food programs. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2038 expands the types of organizations within the Farm to School program that may be considered for competitive grants to provide agricultural-based or garden-based educational activities. As amended, the bill makes a $4.5 million general fund appropriation for the Farm to School program in the 2017-19 biennium. Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends HB 2038 be amended by the -A13 amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Yeah, they did. They worked it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Discussion?
Question.
Senator Johnson.
A question of the carrier. At one point, this bill did not allow liquid milk or wheat to be included, and I would like reassurance on the record that liquid milk and wheat are included as commodities that may be purchased under the Farm to School program.
Senator Johnson, I was your answer man Saturday, but I'm at a loss right now. I don't know what happened to the milk.
It's covered under a federal Senate. I think they went to powdered water instead.
We had
and they cut pears and apples
yeah, they
out
cut completely. Pears and apples.
We had an amendment which took those two lines out.
Yes.
We have help.
19 and 20.
For the record, Chris Donhauer, Legislative Fiscal Office, co-chairs, and Senator Johnson, that there was an amendment adopted, which was included in the language that was adopted by the Capital Construction Subcommittee, that took out the specific references to milk and bread.
And so would it be fair to assume that milk and bread would be available commodities that could be purchased through this program?
As long as they were available prior to the schools signing up for the Farm to School program.
The answer is yes.
Nobody additional discussion? Senator Rye.
I will say that because the federal government does subsidize a lot of the milk programs, and we are one of the few states in the nation that produces enough milk that they use our own milk to do that, I am pleased that that is not at risk here, and I think it was one of the reasons that people falsely took milk out because we are already providing Oregon milk to lots of our kids because it is the perfect thing to provide to our students.
The state drink.
This bill and the amendments did take them out, so they are considered, as everything else is, a particular commodity produced here in Oregon that can be used in the food program. And I'm pleased with the efforts that was made to get that to happen.
Additional discussion. Objections. Motion passes. House Bill 3067A, relating to family supports. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3067 makes a one-time appropriation of $200,000 general fund to the Department of Administrative Services for the 2017-19 biennium to distribute to Marion and Polk counties to implement court care pilot programs. These programs are designed to provide child care and services as a clearinghouse for information and resource referrals for individuals and families with court-related businesses in or near a county courthouse. The measure requires the counties to report back on progress of the pilot program by September 15, 2019. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3067 be reported out to pass.
Discussion. Senator Johnson.
I'm sorry. What does this program actually do? Is this daycare when people are at the courthouse?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And there is a program, I believe it's in Multnomah County,
yeah.
In one of the other counties that exist, and they found that a couple of positives is one that you're able to get the parents and other support activities easier. Because kids are being taken care of.
Additional discussion. Yes, Representative Williamson.
To add to Senator Winters' comments, and I want to thank Senator Winters for being an advocate for this program in this area, because we do have it in Multnomah County, and what we're seeing is more and more folks coming to the courthouse pro se, that they don't have any other support, and they bring their kids with them, and especially when you're talking about domestic violence situations, having the kids outside of the courtroom is incredibly important, and so this is a great program, and so I'm happy that we're passing this today.
Additional discussion? Objections? Motion passes. House Bill 3202A, relating to a Southwest Corridor Max Light Rail project, Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 3202 seeks to establish an expedited land use process for the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Project, a proposed 12-mile max line from downtown Portland to Tigard and Bridgeport in Bridgeport Village in Tualatin. The bill would provide procedures and requirements for establishing criteria and for the review of criteria and the land use decisions for siting the Southwest Corridor Max Light Rail Project. The recommended amendment provides $205,159 other funds expenditure limitations to the Department of Transportation for a position to issue development approvals, permits, licenses, and certificates for the construction of this project. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3202 be amended by the -A6 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion. Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, this and several other votes here, I have not focused enough to vote yes, and so I'll be voting no and trying to get up to speed. I'm always troubled a little bit, having asked for leniency in land use for my district, and some of the more rural interests to support an urban's request for leniency. So on the one hand, I understand it and want to be supportive, but I can't hide the fact that at initial response, until I dive in and look at the details, my thought is, well, can we have some leniency too on the land use laws out in our area? But nevertheless, this and a few others, I'll just be a no vote today until I get more information. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional discussion? Senator Johnson.
I wish to be associated with the good minority leader's comments. 10 years to get a small piece of property inside a UGB leaves me a little on the cool side about waiving regulations for one project and not extending that same courtesy to others. I will support this today, but reserve the right to change my mind on the floor.
Senator DeBolt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I concur with the two, and we'll reserve my right to change. Thanks.
Additional discussion?
I just want to be associated with my good senator. Johnson and Mike did represent it and reserved the right also as I study this particular issue. Thank you.
Objections? Representative McLean. Senator Thompson. Thank you. Motion passes. House Bill 3203B, relating to an analysis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, House Bill 3203 requires contracting agencies to prepare and file with the Bureau of Labor and Industries information on planned public improvements. It specifies that if a contracting agency intends to perform work on a public improvement with a cost of over $200,000 using the agency's own equipment or personnel, the agency must complete an analysis demonstrating that the decision conforms to state policy. It also maintains the exception for road maintenance work done at less than 2 inches that has been in state statute since 1980. House Bill 3203 also requires BOLI to conduct a review every 4 years to determine several items, including whether the methodology used by contracting agencies to calculate costs and threshold amounts should be adjusted. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3203 be amended by the -B14 amendment and be reported out do pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion? Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've come to admire my friend from Northeast Portland, Representative Smith-Warner, and her eagerness to jump in some of the most divisive bills this session. Or perhaps she's just a glutton for punishment, but I appreciate how much effort you put into 3203, and at least I was a no before, but we've gotten to the point where it's produced consensus, which is remarkable.
Have I moved you, Representative?
And I am, you have. And so I will be joining. There is solidarity between rural Oregon and Northeast Portland on 3203.
There be peace in the valley. Yeah.
Hold up. No.
Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Speaking from a city's point, I have concerns about the 2-inch limit, especially in Southern Oregon, where we have problems with contractors that are way too busy, and in some cases roads require a 3-inch lift. So I'll be a no vote just on that, but I'm glad they came to consensus.
And if I may, so as I mentioned in the pony, the 2-inch, the less than 2-inch exemption has been in statute since 1987, and also indeed with a 3-inch situation, you would be at that contracting level. Actually, it would be a lower threshold of $125,000. And the other thing I do want to point out about this bill is that it establishes the BOLI commissioner had talked to me a couple weeks ago about the fact that one of the issues with this in the past has been there has been no real recourse when there were conflicts between contractors and public agencies about the least cost analysis. And this establishes a process, not only a process, where these conflicts or differences of opinion can be taken and setting up a way to review that. It also allows BOLI to kind of look at those process and really give, there's been a lot of anecdotal complaints on both sides about this, and this gives BOLI the opportunity to do a thorough assessment of these contracting practices. So thank you. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rich Angstrom was in the Capital Construction Subcommittee this morning testifying, and I asked him about the 2-inch question, and he said that there's a willingness by all parties to continue the discussion into the interim to try to come to an agreement on that piece.
And just for, may I, Madam Chair, for legislative intent, I was not at the Capital Construction Subcommittee. I, however, have to say, as somebody who has indeed been participating in this, is that my understanding of this agreement is that the 2-inch exception be perhaps put to rest rather than continue to be litigated. So I have a differing interpretation of legislative intent on that.
Senator Hansel.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Also coming from local government as a former county commissioner, I understand that both LOC and AOC have come to agreement to support the bill, at least not oppose it, and I'll be a yes vote.
Thank you. Additional discussion? Objections? Senator DeBoer. Motion passes. Senate Bill 5516, Department of Education, Representative Smith.
Madam Co-Chair.
Pardon me?
You missed one. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, she's
removed.
You're fine.
I apologize.
5516, Department of Education, Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 5516 is the budget bill for the Oregon Department of Education. This agency provides technical assistance, funding, and oversight of programs related to K-12 education, early learning, and youth development. The agency also is responsible for distributing the state school fund and operating the school for the deaf. The Education Subcommittee recommends a budget of $2.6 billion in total funds, with $818.1 million general fund, $651,225 of lottery funds, $323.8 million of other funds, and $1.4 billion of federal funds. Major general fund investments in this budget include $170 million for ballot measure 98 grants to districts for dropout prevention, college-level education opportunities, and career and technical education. This investment accounts for almost all of the general fund increase over the current service level. $1.8 million is designated for developing a Native American curriculum recognizing the cultural heritage, history, and language of Oregon's nine recognized, federally recognized tribes, and $7.4 million for an initiative, the governor's initiative to address chronic absenteeism in the schools. New positions are added to the Early Learning Division for meeting the new federal requirements for background checks for child care providers who were not previously subject to the checks. Offsetting these new positions is the elimination of 15 positions that have been vacant for an extended period or were identified as no longer needed. The Education Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5516 be amended by the Dash 1 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion? Yes, Senator Jones.
I have a question. Is an audit required of this department?
I am not aware of such. I'm happy to bring up Doug Wilson from LFO and see if he has further information about that.
Madam Chair, Senator Girard, there is nothing, no specific audit requirement. They would, of course, be subject to the Secretary of State Audits Division for any compliance audits.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues, I'll be a no. I sat on that committee for a long time, and we really, really need to have an audit because that's just a giant black hole, and we have no clue where the money's going, and so I'll be a no.
Senator Delvin.
I just want to state for the record that the Legislative Audits Committee has requested from the Secretary of State to look at issues surrounding grant and aid programs and how they are siloed and to see if there is some more efficient way to provide those services that actually may be better for the services the students need. And of course, as Mr. Wilson stated, they are subject to normal financial compliance audits. So.
Senator Winters?
Sorry, I must have been allergic to the
Devlin.
He has that effect.
just a question.
That was the grounds for the dissolution.
On the issue of the audit, could it go beyond just the grant and aid issue? I think, you know, that the good senator brought up a really valid concern of a lot of us, the need for an audit of the department, and the black hole is beyond just the grant and aid aspect. So. Then I won't sneeze if you say yes.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I do just while recognizing that there's always, you know, this is a large agency with a myriad of responsibilities. They manage many different kinds of funds of all types. While there is always going to be frustration in this, I do want to call out that they do some of the most important work that we do in this state. And while I agree that there's always better work to be done, I would like to assume good intent in much of the work that they do, that they really do manage under kind of one enormous umbrella. Quite a lot of responsibilities, and so while I support the idea of making sure that they're making the most with those, I would also like to call out much of the good work that they do.
Additional discussion?
Madam Chair, I think some of us would just...
Senator Monroe.
Okay, sorry.
Had his hand up. Sorry, Jackie.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This came through our education subcommittee. And I have noted in the past decade that there have been times when the Department of Education was almost impossible to work with. But there's new leadership there. And the new leadership is a delight to work with. And so Representative Smith Warner and I have met with them many times during the preparation of this budget. This budget actually combines ideas in a number of bills to kind of expedite things. Senate Bill 183, some ideas from Senate Bill 182, all included in this budget. I am all in favor of audits. And would hope that the Secretary of State would do his job and go ahead with such an audit, because I think that audit would show vast improvements in the efficiency of this department.
Just to add, there is nothing that, you know, for us, audits are routinely, and I think they should be welcomed by the agencies, because it does two things. It once it shows us how well things are going, and it also shows us where things need to be improved. So just encouraging, just to continue to encourage that we do request the Secretary of State's office that the audit is beyond grant and aid. Thank you.
Additional discussion? Objections? Senator Girard? Motion passes. Senate Bill 5522, Chief Education Office, Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 5522 is the budget bill for the Chief Education Office. This office coordinates education-related programs from early learning through post-secondary. It is also responsible for the development and maintenance of the statewide longitudinal data system. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends a budget of $4,022,118 general fund dollars and 13 positions. This represents the funding for the first year of the biennium. A special purpose appropriation to the emergency board of $3,972,118 is included in the bill for the cost of the office in the second year of the biennium. This combined amount of just under $8 million is $2 million less than the current service level. Six positions and 5.75 FTE were eliminated, and over $400,000 for regional achievement, compact support, and other activities was reduced from the budget. With the ongoing discussions on the governance structure for education and with the scheduled sunset of this office at the end of the 2017-19 biennium, the legislature and other policymakers will have the opportunity to determine the proper role for this office during the 2018 legislative session. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5522 be amended by the Dash 1 Amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 215 from the previous sessions actually started the process of renewing and looking at this particular office. And as was noted in 17-19, it sunsets. We do have another work group currently that Senator Cruz and I, along with members from the House, have been involved with. I think there are about 27 members, stakeholders from all over the spectrum, having conversations about this particular office. But I think for now, given the coordinating function that it has between a new agency at the bottom called the Early Learning Division and the new one at the top called the HEC, having at least one organization that is responsible for the connections between all those is really important for the rest of Spain. My goal would be to continue to have conversations with our work group to come up with a plan that before it sunsets that we believe is, I think, makes the whole education endeavor more streamlined. But there is no other agency out there right now that is responsible for the coordinating efforts between the different parts of the education system. And so I appreciate this budget. I appreciate what we're doing. We have a Bill 182 that was alluded to earlier that they are really responsible for making sure that we get quality education for our teachers to make the best teachers we can possibly have. There are some other parts, the work on dropouts, all of those things are a part of the function of that office. And I appreciate the work that was done with Representative Smith Warner and the Education Committee about where it's at, but I really think this is what we need to do for this biennium. Thank you.
Additional discussion? Objections? Motion passes. House Bill 5045, Transportation Package Budget. Senator Johnson.
Colleagues, let me start by saying that I'm a yes on this and acknowledge that this is a little awkward. Some of you may recall that I was a no in committee on the transportation package, and now I'm carrying the budget for that same bill. Another in a series of little ironies that have characterized this session. So, colleagues, House Bill 5045 provides the expenditure limitation needed to begin implementation of the Transportation Funding Package, House Bill 2017, in the 1719 biennium. It provides other fund expenditure limitation of $110.9 million and 36.6 FTE for the Department of Transportation, mostly for direct project costs, public transit grants, and project-related studies. It provides $3.9 million and 4.25 FTE for the Department of Revenue to implement transportation package taxes, including the new statewide transit tax, and $389,122 and 1.75 FTE for the Department of Environmental Quality to establish a rebate program for the purchase of qualifying low-emission vehicles and to address increased stormwater permitting resulting from the transportation projects in House Bill 2017. The limitation in the bill for ODOT reflects the estimated need for the first 6 months of the 2017-19 biennium. A related budget note directs the department to report during the 2018 legislative session on the status of hiring and projects included in the package, as well as on additional limitation of positions needed to fully implement the package. This bill includes trigger language so that it would only become effective if House Bill 2017 is enacted. The recommended amendment provides the described expenditure limitation. Your Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5045 be amended by the -2 amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion. Senator Gerard.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, I was a no on the transportation package. This is just the expenditure part of that package. I will be a no on the taxing mechanisms that will be coming before in a different bill.
Additional discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Senate Bill 5505, Bond Authorization, Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5505 limits the maximum amount of bonds and third-party financing agreements that state agencies may issue and the amount of revenue state agencies may raise from such issuance. The proceeds from issuance of bonds are included as revenues in agency budgets. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommendations include $367.5 million of Article 11G and Article 11Q bonds to finance 14 public university projects and 15 community college projects, $206.1 million of Article 11Q bonds to finance the capital costs of state property, $121.6 million of Article 11M and Article 11N bonds for seismic rehabilitation grants to schools and emergency services facilities, $101 million of Article 11P bonds to fund matching grants to school districts for capital improvements, $101 million of certificates of participation to finance the release of a portion of the Elliott State Forest from the Common School Fund, $81.1 million of Article 11Q bonds for the Local Innovation and Fast Track Housing Program, and $199.9 million of lottery revenue bonds to support projects authorized in Senate Bill 5530 and House Bill 2278 passed during the 2015 session. A detailed list of project amounts and descriptions is included in the budget report. Total general fund debt service for all bonds approved in the bill is estimated to be $25.1 million in the 2017-19 biennium and $184.2 million in the 2019-21 biennium. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5505 be amended by the -2 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion. Senator
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, this is one of those bills that there's a lot of good and there's a little bad. There's about $940 million worth of really good projects, and there is $100 million to purchase the Elliott that I am just viscerally opposed to. But $900 million outweighs the $100 million, and I will vote yes. But I really think that that is one of the biggest mistakes this state has ever made.
Senator Thompson.
I just want to give a shout out to the committee for the projects in the community colleges in my area, Columbia Gorge Community College, Clackamas, and Mount Hood. Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Hansel.
I would just echo the remarks of my colleague, Fred Girard. $900 million good, $100 million not so good, but I'll be a yes vote.
Thank you. Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have serious concerns about us not dealing with PERS and what that may do to our bonding authority and rates in the future. And I'm a little hesitant to leave this session without some kind of cost containment or funding for PERS, but I will be a yes.
Additional discussion? Objections? Representative McLean? Senator Thompson? Motion passes. Senate Bill 5530, Lottery Bond Authorization. Senator Girard.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5530 authorizes the issuance of lottery revenue bonds for specified projects. A total of $165.1 million of net lottery bond proceeds are authorized to be spent on 31 identified projects, including $30 million to the Department of Transportation for Connect Oregon, $20 million to recapitalize the Special Public Works Fund for municipal infrastructure projects, $10 million for levee inspections and repair projects, $25 million for affordable housing preservation, $22.2 million for planning feasibility studies and water supply development projects. A complete project list is provided in the staff measure summary for the bills. Bonds are scheduled to be issued in the spring of 2019, so no debt service payments are due in the 2017-19 biennium. Lottery funds debt service is estimated to be $29.8 million in the 2019-21 biennium for the projects authorized in Senate Bill 5530. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5530 be amended by the dash 4 amendments and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion. Objections. Representative McLean.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was sleeping.
Senator Thompson. Thank you. Motion passes. Senate Bill 5506, Capital Construction. Senator Girard.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We just modified this a few minutes ago. Senate Bill 5506 is the budget bill for capital construction projects. The bill establishes authority for the acquisition of land and the planning, design, repair, construction of projects with costs over $1 million. Projects are funded with proceeds of bonds authorized in Senate Bill 5505, as well as other revenue and federal grants received by agencies. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends total capital construction expenditure limitation for the 2017-19 biennium of $738.3 million other funds and $4.8 million federal funds. Capital construction expenditure limitation is established for a six-year period. Projects approved in this bill will expire on June 30, 2023. The bill also extends dates and increases limitations for previously approved projects. The budget report provides a detailed list of capital construction project descriptions and recommended amounts. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5506 be amended by the dash 1 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion? Representative McLean.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is, this is long while I'm familiar with many of the projects here, but this and some of the other previous bills I'm still drilling down on, so I don't call it a courtesy no, I'm just a no until I fully understand the level of each project, and so I'm a no on this one as well.
Additional discussion? Objections? Senator Thompson first this time, and Representative McClain.
Nice job, Kate.
I paid attention to that.
Senate Bill 5529, Lottery and CFA Allocation. Senate Bill 5529 allocates and transfers lottery funds and funds from the criminal fine account and Oregon marijuana account to finance expenditures approved in the budget. Lottery funds are allocated to support the state school fund and pay debt service on lottery revenue bonds. Other lottery allocations provide support to the Oregon Business Development Department, to counties for economic development programs and county fairs, to public universities for intercollegiate athletics, academic scholarships and the outdoor school program, to the Oregon Health Authority for gambling addiction prevention and treatment programs, and to the Governor's Office for Regional Solutions Program staff. Allocations of Ballot Measure 96 lottery funds dedicated to veterans services are allocated from the Veterans Services Fund for the first time. Measure 96 funds are allocated to the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Housing and Community Services for Veterans Programs. The bill also allocates $77 million from the criminal fine account for agency and county programs and $162 million of marijuana tax revenue to the state school fund, mental health, alcoholism, and drug abuse prevention and treatment programs, and the state police. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5529 be amended by the Dash 3 Amendment and be reported out due pass as amended. Discussion. Objections. Representative McClain. Motion passes. House Bill 5006, Emergency Board, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I go into giving the presentation on this, I would like to state that the Capital Construction Committee had to come back and make a minor correction to this, and that's reflected in the Dash 7 amendment, and that's the basis of this pony. I just do not have a printed pony because it was just posted probably about 40 minutes ago. HB 5006 is the budget reconciliation bill that implements the remaining pieces of the state budget for the 2017-19 biennium. The bill establishes appropriations for the emergency board, finalizes the general fund components of the statewide budget, implements budgetary changes tied to other legislation, and makes technical adjustments to agency budgets previously approved. Key elements, including general fund appropriations for specific agencies or purposes, are listed below. $50 million general purpose emergency fund appropriation to the emergency board. Special purchase appropriations to the emergency board for state employee compensation changes, parentheses $100 million, and the state agencies related to non-state employee compensation changes, $10 million. An additional $20 million for the Emergency Housing Assistance and State Homeless Assistance Programs, bringing total funding to just over $40 million. A total of $8 million for the Portland Harbor Superfund site cleanup activities, an additional $5.3 million for the Oregon Promise Program, which brings total funding to $40 million. $10 million for treatment of hepatitis C stage 2 for the Oregon Health Plan, an additional $6.2 million to add 20 state troopers and drug enforcement officers to the Oregon State Police. Other actions taken, the bill provides other funds limitation to various agencies for bond-funded projects, including $120 million for seismic rehabilitation grants, including $100 million for schools and $20 million for emergency services facilities. $100 million for the Oregon School Capital Improvement Matching Program to assist school districts with the capital cost of their facilities. $100 million for payment of the Common School Fund related to the Elliott State Forest. $92.6 million to complete construction of the Multnomah County Courthouse. $30 million for Connect Oregon 7. $45 million for continued development and implementation of one integrated eligibility Medicaid eligibility system. $30 million to recapitalize the Special Public Works Fund for municipal infrastructure projects including $10 million designated for levy projects, $25 million for affordable housing preservation, $22.2 million for planning feasibility studies and water supply development projects costs. The bill reflects savings from statewide adjustments, including those to implement cost containment, as well as reductions to debt service, Department of Administrative Services assessment and charges, and Attorney General's rates. These adjustments result in total funds reduction of $293.7 million and a savings of $135.8 million general fund. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends HB 5006 be amended by the Dash 7 amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This year, statewide, you're taking a pretty big hit. I think it's down $3 million or so. Just I see a couple little projects kind of stuck in here that could be attributed to that in certain parts of the state. Just to give you an example, Hood River Extension Service out there, they're losing three positions because of retirement, and none of those are being filled. So maybe we'll have to come back with e-board money at some time later when we find out they can't do their business, or hopefully we can get that figured out by the end of the session. So thank you.
Additional discussion?
Yes.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to point out that many are probably aware there are some projects that were requested that were small amounts of money that were actually decided to be paid with cash and are in a different bill.
Thank you.
Is that marijuana money?
That's helpful. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say thanks for the $10 million towards levies. Anybody who lives behind one knows that that's definitely not enough for the state. That includes anybody along any of our rivers and so on. But having some in here so we can start having the conversation, I think, as time goes on, because of the Corps pulling out of doing a lot of this work, we're going to continue to see that as a really big need in the state. And I just wanted to point it out that that will do a little bit of levy work, but not all of the levy work that's necessary in our state to protect the people behind them. I do appreciate it a lot that there's 10 minutes.
Additional discussion?
Take it out of dredge.
Objections. Senator Thompson. Representative McLean.
Kind of a win-win.
Motion passes. House Bill 3470, Program Changes. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3470, as amended, makes the necessary changes in statutes and session laws to support the 2017-19 legislatively adopted budget, to clarify the application of statutes for the budget, and to modify provisions related to the use of funds. This non-appropriation bill is necessary to achieve a balanced budget for the 2017-19 biennium. Specifically, the measure extends the repeal date on various statutes, including a report on the state treasurer's investment statutes, determination the allocation of science, technology, energy, engineering and math, and career and technical education resources after passage of ballot measure 98, authorizes the Department of Human Services to appear as a party in juvenile court proceedings without appearance of an attorney, suspends certain temporary assistance for needy families, program services, and extends current law related to legislator and other elected official salaries, transfers the Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service from the Housing and Community Services Department to the Office of the Governor, and transfers Connect Oregon loan repayments from the Department of Transportation to the Oregon Business Development Department, changes the allocation of state marijuana tax revenue monies, changes the method by which cities and counties receive state marijuana tax allocation, and directs the Office of Economic Analysis to forecast state marijuana tax revenues, allows the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to continue to temporarily borrow from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission account to pay expenses of the Marijuana Control Commission account, allows counties to continue to reallocate up to one half of general fund appropriated for county law libraries to conciliation and mediation services, transfers $111.3 million of various fund balances to the general fund for general governmental purposes, and makes various other changes specified in the fiscal impact statement and staff measure summary. The bill has an emergency clause and is effective upon passage. Excuse me. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends HB 3470 be amended by the Dash 8 amendment and reported out. Do pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion. Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I have been very concerned about the Department of Human Services appearing as party in juvenile court proceeding without representation. We've been working on this issue since I got here. It's an issue we're going to have to solve because I'm very concerned about DHS folks appearing without attorneys in court. It's a big, expensive problem. I know that. And so I'm glad that we're extending the sunset. But getting that problem solved is something we need to do.
Thank you. Senator Steiner-Hayward.
Thank you. I may be misunderstanding, Representative, but we have allocated $6.9 million to help address that issue. It was in the DHS budget, and now it's in 5006. You'll see it listed in there as well to begin that work to address that problem. I agree that it's a bigger problem than that, but we are working hard to begin to address that.
Right. And I totally agree, and I'm glad that we're beginning to address that. It is a big problem. Unless the price tag has come down dramatically, that's just the tip of the iceberg on this issue. And so I want to thank the subcommittee for working on it. I just wanted to put a marker on the record that we need to continue to do this.
Those funds are actually matched by some federal funds as well, so they leverage a lot of federal funds, Representative, so that the price tag is definitely bigger, but the general fund contribution is not too big.
Thank you.
I hope that's helpful.
That is. Thank you.
Representative Smith-Warren. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, can you talk a little bit more about the changes in the allocation of the state marijuana tax revenue monies?
Madam Co-Chair, maybe I'll bring staff up. My understanding is that a lot of it is clarification, but maybe if staff would come forward, they could answer more of your questions specifically. There was a measure that passed actually in one chamber that changed allocations but did not pass in the other chamber. So I think we are keeping the same allocations that were in the measure that passed with the public. So if staff could come forward and just note why this is included in the pony.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith-Warner, the allocation is now in the measure is 40% to the state school fund, and then the only other change was the version in a previous bill had put 10% towards the community college support fund. That's been removed, and now all that is going to the state school fund instead. And it also changes it from the common school fund to
the
state school.
Yeah, that's the primary change.
Allocations to the state police and to mental health and to cities and counties were not affected.
Okay. Follow up?
Yeah.
So I know that because I carried the state school fund bill on the floor, my understanding was that those initial numbers, is there some adjusting in that as well?
Madam Chair.
The percentages are as prescribed by law.
Yes.
Senator Devlin.
Two things here. One, when I believe, let me back up just a moment. The primary change that we're talking about, as stated, was the measure said the money goes to the common school fund. Now it will go to the state school fund. I think Mr. Rocco should comment on whatever adjustment was necessary, because I think we had anticipated that perhaps the revenue measure would pass that actually changed 10% going to community colleges would pass. But we've corrected that in other documents that you are passing here today. So it's the totally 40% going to the state school fund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith-Warner, the amendments to House Bill 5006 include, and to in the lottery, and in Senate Bill 5529, the lottery CFA and marijuana allocation bill combined, result in a change in the amount of marijuana money going to the state school fund, a change in the lottery funds going to the state school fund, a slight reduction in the general fund, because we balance all these to get to the target number. So if you add the marijuana money, the lottery funds money, the general fund money, and a small amount of timber tax money, the total comes to $8.2 billion. So that is all included in these bills.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Final follow-up, although it looks like Senator Devlin might have another comment.
I just want to get this on the record. There was no reduction in the allocation also to community colleges.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Because of the way we do this and have to realign the funding sources at the end of the session, there was never any money put into the community college support fund, so it was not ever affected. If the previous measure would have passed, we would have made that change in the end of session bills, and so there was no change to the community college support fund, general fund.
Thank you, Mr. Rocco. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And just a final follow-up, I know that the cities and counties have been concerned about some specific language about money to law enforcement and cities and counties, and that has all been account on the marijuana money, and that has all been accounted for in this bill.
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Additional discussion?
Objections? Motion passes. Senator Devlin, this is the last bill on the printed agenda at the moment. Senate Bill 1067 relating to government cost control.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 1067 makes several changes to state government processes, programs, and services to reduce and contain state government costs. These changes include additional review and reporting on staffing and personnel costs, state procurement practices, and the state lottery administrative costs and transfer rates, modifications to budgeting practices, centralization and other changes to debt collection practices for state government, begins the process to merge the Public Employees Benefit Board and the Oregon Educators Benefit Board, and make changes to health plans, including eliminating double coverage for PEB and OWEB covered employees, limiting health plan increases at no more than 3.4% per year, and tying hospital rates to a percentage of Medicare rates. Adjust provisions regarding PERS side accounts, limits the PERS contingency reserve to $50 million and redeploys funds above that amount to other PERS needs, including reducing the unfunded actuarial liability. In addition to direct savings that are expected to begin in the 2019-21 biennium, the measure is anticipated to institute prudent financial principles, constrain future budgetary growth, and produce reductions in agency budgets. The Capital Construction Committee recommends Senate Bill 1067 be amended by the -28 amendment and be reported out do pass as amended.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a lot in this bill, and I get it, so I don't want to act like there's only one piece that I'm concerned about. Most of this, I think, is really good. The only concern I have at the moment, major concern, is about the payments to hospitals through, for PEB and OEB beneficiaries. What exactly, Senator, if you wouldn't be so kind, ended up being the agreement on that? Because the hospitals have really stepped up to the plate on the provider tax, and I want to make sure I understand what else we're doing to them.
Okay. Could I have Ms. Ames come forward? And I think we changed this provision so it was not effective immediately. It will not be effective until 2020. I think the cost containment group and the discussions when we were doing the provider tax was very upfront because there was some discussion at that time about whether we should take this off the table during those because we had the provider tax. And because of some of the issues in terms of people actually looking at where the state could reduce costs, and because in some cases for hospitals we were paying 220 and to some cases as much as over 400% of Medicare costs, we felt this is an area to be looked at. But in the amendments to this bill, I believe we delayed that implementation until 2019. But I wanted Ms. Ames to confirm that in the date because I don't have it right off the top of my head.
Thank you.
Linda Ames with Legislative Fiscal. Mr. Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward. Excuse me. The implementation date for that section where the hospital payments are reduced is for plan years after July 1 of 19. So PEB and OEB have slightly different time periods, but it would be for that. So for PEB, it wouldn't be till the 2020 plan year. That, by coincidence, is the same date
when the 0.7% true tax will sunset for the hospitals.
Okay, thank you. And one follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I've been trying to parse through the amendments in the bill, and it's a little hard to go back and forth without an engrossed version, but what's this issue around exemptions for certain hospitals that are of a, in communities? I mean, it sounds like one of those, we're targeting something very specific here, and I can't quite figure out what we're doing. There's something about, in the amendment, about hospitals that are in communities less than 70,000 and...
Klamath and Bay City.
Two public hospitals, actually. Right.
Mr. Chair, I know that it's two small public hospitals, but I don't actually know which two.
Okay.
Goose Bend, Klamath, I believe.
Senator Johnson.
Following on the line of questions or comments that was opened by Senator Steiner Hayward, this bill is a huge conflict for me. I came to this session with cost containment as one of my personal priorities, and I had the privilege of being part of the team that negotiated some of the cost containment ideas. We had a lot of really good and necessary ideas. They were presented to the Capital Construction Sub on April the 21st. There's a memorandum to that effect on OLIS. After that, some of them were outright rejected, and it is my opinion that in order to demonstrate true cost containment, that the tying hospital rates to a certain percentage of Medicare came up in the list. My problem with this is that we asked the hospitals to stand with us to fill a very difficult budget gap, a half a billion dollar gap in the health plan, and they stepped up. They accepted not only a renewal of the provider tax architecture, but they also accepted a true tax. The A and B hospitals, the little guys, stepped up. And now we have an exception, but the A and Bs stepped up. And so they helped us when we asked them. I think, and Senator Devlin made the case for this very clearly in the debate about 229, that if there is a referral, we're going to need those hospitals to stand shoulder to shoulder with us to defend in a referral. This also has a huge impact on some of the hospitals. Emmanuel, I know, is taking a $68 million, I don't know about Salem, but I know Emmanuel's numbers because I talked to Dr. Brown, a $68 million hit as a result of the true tax. And that could result in layoffs. It will accelerate their financial problems if this goes to their bottom line, and we may end up laying off exactly the people that we need, especially in busy urban ERs. We are going to need them like crazy in the next biennium, and we all are uncertain or unaware of what federal changes there are, but in order to preserve this population with insurance, we're going to need our friends, the hospitals, to step up with us. And finally, for me, there's something profoundly wrong in asking folks for assistance and then turning around and financially punishing them for their helpfulness. This bill is one that I was a champion of until this piece was cemented in it, even with the extension. Now, for today's purposes, particularly because this is the last bill of what may be the last Ways and Means, how this vote turns out is going to be problematic. But for the foregoing reasons that I just mentioned, and I won't repeat them, I think this is wrong.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Johnson just did a fabulous job. I wasn't on the Cost Containment Committee, and I really wanted to support, and I support everything in 1067, and I really wanted to be there, but I'm hearing from my hospitals on the 200% and plus the carve-outs. I had heard there was more than two carve-outs. If there are only two, that's good, but it's a shame to have one piece take away the rest of the bill for me. I'm going to have to be a no. I have to support my rural hospitals.
Senator Girard.
I think Senator Johnson said what I was going to say in spades, so I will be a no vote.
Senator Roblin.
So I appreciate the comments made by Senator Johnson. I will be a yes on this one, and I am hopeful that the rate review bill that we also are passing, I think, not this time but earlier, a different bill, we'll look at this really closely, because my concern is the 200% seems to be a little arbitrary, and I get nervous about that, and we need to make sure that hospitals can continue to provide the services we expect of them, and I hope that as we look at that over the next year and a half, we take real seriously what we're doing with this bill and how it moves on. If we want to come back and look at changes, we can. I appreciate the carve-outs for the A and B hospitals, because I think they would not survive if they had to do it, and I think they are carved out. Are they not?
Just two. Yours and Klamath.
A's and B's.
A's and B's are in.
No, they're out.
Klamath and Coos Bay aren't A's and B's. They're DRGs.
The two that are carved out are DRGs, and all of the A and B, which we needed to do. I mean, I don't think they would have survived on those things. So I just want to make sure that we continue to look at the other DRGs that are going to be paying this, because they are the ones that stepped up again with the true tax, and I just hopefully we'll continue to look at it, but I'll be a yes for right now.
Thank you. Ms. Ames, before we continue the discussion and questions, could you please clarify for the committee which types of hospitals are impacted by this and which are not, because there was a little bit of a confusion.
Co-Chair Nathanson, all the A's and B's are excluded, and two of the small DRGs are excluded from the 200% cap.
Thank you. Senator Rowland.
Yeah.
Then Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I just want to add a couple of other points. Well, Senator Winters can go first. I'm happy to wait, Madam Chair. Your call.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to share, Senator Johnson and I were both on cost containment, and there was a lot of work that went into cost containment, and it's very conflicting when now the work that we had done, and when we mentioned the hospital, Salem Hospital has the highest utilization rate in the state and will be dramatically impacted by the action, and so I share the feeling of being conflicted for several reasons. The hospitals did come to us, and it was hard to get all the agreements that we reached, and they agreed to assist us. And then we're going to pile on an additional, and it's not a small dollar amount. And it's troublesome because in some cases, my particular hospital will also, not only are we talking about employees that may be lost, but also going forward with some of the expansion that was on the design for the future. And so it's one that, although, you know, both the Senator Gerard and I offered up the delay. But if there was any way possible that actually we could take the hospitals out of this altogether, it would be preferable. I think when you have friends, and these friends have been with us since 2003. They were with us in 2003 when we were in a crunch, when we were forced in a position of where we thought we were going to have to end the Oregon Health Plan. And it was the hospitals that came forward then that said, you know, we will assist. And so I don't think that we treat our friends this way, to be honest. And we've had quite a conversation about this, and I'm extremely conflicted about it, because one, I think we all want to see cost containment go forward, but at the same time, I think we also want fairness.
Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm concerned that our cost containment didn't go far enough, and also our communities are vital that our hospitals are healthy and doing a good job. Their capital investments are beyond belief in what they have to do. And I appreciated them coming forward and helping us out of a real bad problem. And I agree with what's been said. I'd rather remove it from the bill. But I am going to be a no on the bill.
Thank you. Senator Manning?
I'm happy to wait, Senator. I've spoken once, so other people can go first.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I've been listening to a lot of the conversations back and forth around here. And as I understand, this is not going to be implemented, or there's a delay, not until 2020. While I will be supporting this bill, I'm hoping that we can revisit this before it actually goes into effect and kind of do a measurement and survey of what the potential impact would be at that time. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Let's see. We've got a lot more hands going up. I think all of the senators are going to speak on this one. Senator Girard, I saw your hand earlier.
Thank you. I just want to make the point that not everything is created equal in this bill for hospitals. So you have some hospitals that are really going to be hammered by this, other hospitals that are not. Now, I have to tell you that if you think your hospital is protected because it's exempted out, not so. Because what they're that has to be negotiated. So the rate they're going to start at is going to be the 200% level. And you're not going to get probably what your costs are out of the deal. So if we're going to treat hospitals, we need to treat them fairly across the board, not just picking on a few where we have the major amount of public employees. So on that, I just see other people saying, well, I'm exempted out, and that might take care of the problem. It really doesn't. So I have a small hospital 15 miles from here, but they're not going to get that much difference of a rate between what they're given Salem. And they're scared spitless. They have 60% as far as Medicare and Medicaid, and that's their mix starting out going into this. And then all of a sudden you throw in the fact that you want a cheaper rate for public employees, which it's a bedroom community. It's just really going to foul up the mix, and that hospital is going to be really in severe problems. So I would encourage people to be a no. This isn't something that I know that we're going to be moving forward, but it's not fair to hospitals across the board either. I mean, the bad thing is I agree with Senator Johnson that this is nothing but piling on. But then you put something that differs from hospital to hospital, that's not right either.
Let's see. I think I had seen hands also from Monroe and Hansel. Is that right? I'm going to ask Senator Steiner Hayward to speak now, because I had...
I can wait, whichever you prefer, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Other people haven't spoken.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, my concern is, you know, I've heard it said that we're actually punishing our friends for good behavior. And if that's the case, that really troubles me, unless it's something that we can't get along without. And if that's not the case, I'd like somebody to explain to me why it's not the case that we're actually punishing our friends for good behavior.
Senator Hansel.
Well, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just to something that Senator Johnson said, and I think Senator Monroe is referring to it now. We just passed Senate Bill 229 out of this in case there's a referral of House Bill 2391, which sets up this first go-around of the provider tax. And so if it gets referred to the January, and we stab our friends, the way I look at it here in the back now, why would our friends be with us to want to try to maintain that? I think we're just, they stood with us. We want them to stand with us if it gets referred. And by doing this action here, there's no reason why they would do it. They can't trust us. And I think it's a huge mistake to include them in this cost containment bill. I don't think it's right. I think it's a violation of trust, and I'm a no vote.
Senator Steiner-Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate all the comments that the people have made, and I want to be clear that I recognize as much as anybody and work very hard with my co-chair to find cost containment in the areas of the budgets that we oversaw through the Human Services Subcommittee. And I think there are some other good aspects in this bill. However, I remain concerned for several reasons. The first is, you know, I've been talking for a long time about the challenges of staying in a fee-for-service mode of paying for things. You do something, you get paid for it. And we're working hard. Senate Bill 934, which we passed this session, will work towards increasing alternative payment methodology for primary care practices. And Senate Bill 419, which is also passing this year, will establish a task force to look at alternative ways to pay hospitals, whether through the Maryland model or other models. And this is, in essence, a perpetuation of a fee-for-service model of paying for hospital care, which, frankly, I don't like any more than a fee-for-service model of paying for primary care. That's not how we should be doing things in this day and age. And furthermore, there are a whole host of other ideas that were on the table, as Senator Johnson alluded to, that would have been carrots and not just sticks, not just for the hospitals, but for individuals. We have a lot of individuals who are public employees whose spouses work at companies that also provide good health insurance, but who are insured through PEB. And that costs us a boatload of money. We could figure out a way to incentivize people so that people would take the other insurance, too. There are a lot of different ways to think about these problems. And to just put one specific thing in there and then say the merged PEB and OIB people should come back and talk to us about other ideas, I'm really struggling with this. I think I can be a yes on this bill, but I don't like it very much. And the other problem is that even saying that it doesn't take effect until the plan year starting after July 1st of 2019 is problematic because rate setting happens in the spring, right? And that's when DCBS decides rates, including for PEB and OEB for the not self-insured plans. And that means that before the 2019 legislative session could really get something done to fix this, we would have to be doing, the insurance companies would have to be doing rate setting based on the anticipated cuts that were coming. And the timing just doesn't work very well. So I'm really struggling right now because I appreciate the work that was done by the cost containment group, but I really do feel like this is not smart policy. It's not smart legislation. It's not creative. It's not modern thinking about how we pay for health care.
Representative Rayfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly appreciate the conversation, and I certainly appreciate that when we started this session, we started with a $900 million shortfall, and we worked that down to a $600 million shortfall, and we looked within health care to solve that shortfall. And the idea was solving the shortfall within health care, and primarily the reason was because this industry had seen a significant influx of dollars into our budget. And if you go back several bienniums, the Health Services Division went from $7 billion to over $15 billion. We've seen a massive influx of dollars into our state as a result of the Affordable Care expansion. And so the idea was in the session is to solve this issue. Hospitals have done well at times. And especially as we've seen a decrease in the uncompensated care coming into these hospitals as people have had insurance. So when looking at this as co-chairs of this budget, one of the things that we have to do, Madam Chair, is really be effective stewards of the public dollars. And within PEB and OEB, one of the things that has been very well noted is that the reimbursements that we've been paying, the actual amounts that we've been paying to hospitals have been greater than in other areas of the private market. And so what you see is it appears as though there is a cost shifting from the private market into OEB because we have not had the leverage as a state to negotiate as effectively as we should have. And as stewards of public dollars, we find better ways to negotiate so that we're using this money better, and we should be paying what the value of those services are, not more than what the value of the services are. And so I'm supportive of the underlying bill because I believe this bill gives us the ability to start paying for what the actual value of the services are. And what I would also note is there are some private insurance companies are paying less than 200% of the Medicare rate. So for those reasons, I think that this is very important. The other thing that also is very important in this underlying bill is within PEB and OEB, we're eliminating the double coverage impact that we have within this budget. And so in certain instances, folks may be double covered under public benefits, and we're going to eliminate that. Again, is another way that we can reduce costs. If in the long term for the state, as we try and correct these or look at cost containment, these are essential things that we have to do to kind of curb these costs, and they're not easy. I'm not saying these cuts are going to be easy for hospitals or easy for anyone, but what we have to do is be creative, and sometimes by doing these things, it forces innovation within these institutions so that we can actually start moving in the right direction. And so that's why I believe that this is essential if all of us are truly committed to cost containment.
Thank you, Representative Rayfield. Additional discussion?
Yeah.
Representative McClain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, it's all been said, but not everyone has said it. And feeling excluded, I wanted to pipe in. I'll be a no because I don't have to be a yes to move the bill. And taking advantage of that position to illustrate the fact that this is just not enough. You know, we haven't asked our public employees who have health care benefits at 140-150% of federal counterparts. We could have asked them to contribute more to their health care. We could have done a lot of things. I think there were at one point the Oregon Business Council and others pointed out cost containments that were 3, 4, 5 times the amount of this bill. It is fitting, though, that in a session like this, that this is the last bill. There might be some finger marks on the floor as we've dragged people along, but nevertheless, we're here. We're going to have to do more. This committee is going to have to do more. And it is not fun. But the fact is that with one party in charge of the state, sooner or later that party has to deal with the fact that we have collective bargaining obligations with no checks and balances, where a governor signs off on an agreement and we're left to pay the bill. And when you equate compassion to money, we're never going to have a budget that bends a cost curve. So we've got real problems, and there is no solution being offered. So the last bill we have here is the big sound of one big can being kicked down the road. This is at least something. It's not nearly enough. And the irony is that, of course, the people who were, as we heard, mistreated were the ones who volunteered. So no good deed goes unpunished. And that's a fitting exclamation point for the 2017 legislative session.
Additional discussion. Senator Devlin.
Retort by Senator Devlin.
Right on time. Madam Chair, Representative McClain, I've been in the queue a long time,
okay.
So I actually, I didn't even know you were going to be in the queue at the time. Most of the members, I think, with the exception of Senator Monroe, are the cost containment portion of the Senate cost containment group. The group met for approximately 3+ months, had numerous meetings, had long lists of potential things to look at in terms of cost containment. This actual item was on the original list, to be honest. It has always been on the list. As I said earlier, even during our discussions on provider taxes, we were very upfront with the hospitals that it was still on the list. In terms of the hospitals being friends, I think they are friends. I hope we don't have too many foes. We've been working with the hospitals on these various issues. The hospitals requested of me, I think back in June of last year, to meet every 3 weeks on provider tax related issues, and we did that all the way up until the session. And my last discussion on this was just about an hour ago with the Chief Financial Officer of Legacy on this issue. And the only thing that we actually agreed upon in that discussion, other than a very pleasant discussion, was everything in healthcare was in flux. Everything in healthcare was in flux. The provider tax itself is essential to putting this budget together. It is based on a framework that we do not even know if it will be in existence another 90 days or another 10 years. And the question that was asked, if this is referred, why would the hospitals come out? And I don't mean this in any sense to sound negative, but if we lose the expanded population, not only the human impact of losing that expanded population, we lose approximately $5.2 billion in federal funds. And plus that, once you lose that expanded population, the entire rest of the system starts to have cracks, and very significant cracks. I actually believe that this is something that we should probably keep in the package now. We know we will revisit it. But I also think it's kind of ironic, and I know there are other issues, and I'm not doing this as a retort, Representative McClain. I recognize that the issue of employees sharing a higher portion of the cost is a very legitimate issue, but there's also the issue of the overall cost and how much that is. And this is one of the areas that to address cost. This, I'm going to take this comment away from the hospitals because I don't think they came up during our discussions in the Capital Construction Committee, although a few parties came up, one of them actually suggesting they would like the Maryland model of setting hospital rates. But almost everybody that came up in those discussions on cost containment said, cut somebody, but don't cut me. And if our standard is always going to be cut somebody else but me, we're never going to do very much cost containment. So I just wanted to put that on the record, and I certainly don't mean it as a retort because I was actually in the queue a long time before you spoke.
But requested to speak last.
Yes.
Senator, do you want to be the best?
Now there's a...
No players dragon.
Busted.
But I didn't know Representative McClain would speak.
Busted.
Yes, we do need to. We need to...
Senator Devlin has requested that this committee stand at ease. This is at the request from the Senate side. I don't know how long we'll be standing at ease.
Can you give us
but
like,
please don't go too far.
Can you give us
Thank
like
you. We're at ease minutes. Now.
Can I get the...
We are no longer at ease. We've had our ease. We are rested. So we were still in discussion of Senate Bill 1067. Is there additional discussion? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a small clarification. When I said my rural hospitals, St. Charles is mine also. And so it's more than just A's and B's. I just wanted to clarify.
Thank you. Additional discussion.
Did we each go through again?
No.
Arnie?
I'm going to take that not as a rhetorical question. I'm going to answer. No.
No? Oh, okay.
Additional discussion?
Your head.
Objections?
Some of us would like to be...
Mr. Rocco, why don't you call the roll? That will be easier for you.
Senator Monroe.
Courtesy, aye.
Senator Dredd?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Courtesy, yes.
Senator Hansel?
No.
Senator Roblin?
Yes.
Senator Frederick?
Yes.
Senator Manning?
Aye.
Senator DeBoer?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Winters?
Courtesy with options.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson?
I love that new line, courtesy with options.
Co-Chair Devlin?
Aye.
He's just coined a new phrase.
Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative McLean?
No.
Representative Williamson?
Yes.
Representative Gombert?
Aye.
Representative Smith Warner?
Sincere aye.
Representative Holvey?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Co-Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Motion carries?
Motion passes. Mr. Rocco, I understand that there is nothing else on our agenda at the moment, but we will just be recessed at this time. Is that correct?
Our next meeting, I believe, is if we have an error, is at 3 a.m. in the morning. I'm just kidding.
That would be the next day.
I wouldn't give it to you now.
And Chair, it's a precautionary measure in case something happens, but there's no intention to have any further meetings this tonight, and at midnight the meeting goes away. So if something does come up, we will let everybody know, and
we'll turn our cars around and be right back.
No anticipation of anything else tonight.
Okay, try to get the chair's attention.
Senator Hansel.
So this is it for us? There'd be no meetings?
Unless there's something really strange.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, next day.
Madam Chair?
It's been a long, strange trip. That's true.
Madam Chair, yes. There may be a need for another meeting of the full committee for conflict amendments. Right. As bills go through the first chamber on their way to the second chamber, if there's a conflict, then legislative council lets us know, and then we would have to have a meeting to deal with those conflict amendments. But other than that, there's no business planned.
Thank you, Mr. Rocco. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, given Mr. Rocco's announcement, may I have the floor briefly?
Sure.
Thank you. Colleagues, one of the historic and traditional duties of the Ways and Means co-vice chairs is the selection and presentation of a gift to the August co-chairs. With regret, Representative Smith isn't here, so co-vice chair Rayfield will have to go solo. But given that this is now our last meeting, or very easily could be, Senator Winters and I would like to start on the Senate side. We are pleased to present a gift to Co-Chair Devlin for his exceptional service as the Senate co-chair. But before we give it to him, I want to make a couple of comments. As many of you, if not all of you, may surmise, shopping for Co-Chair Devlin is daunting. So Senator Winters and I tried to find something very unique, something that would appeal to Co-Chair Devlin's quirky sense of the interesting and cool things to do, as well as his frequently articulated love of all things aviation. So we are pleased to present him with the enclosed certificate, as well as a certificate for weekend accommodations in Astoria, so that when he will be near the airport, when the call comes to escort a ship across the graveyard of the Pacific.
And we want to assure you that his accommodations are a rest home.
How long is he staying?
May I read it? I'm going to take the liberty of reading this certificate. It says, in grateful appreciation for your leadership as Senate co-chair of Ways and Means, we're pleased to present you with the ride of a lifetime. You will have the rare opportunity to fly out across the Columbia River Bar in the Columbia River Bar pilot's helicopter to meet an incoming ship. Welcome. From the air, you will observe the actual pilot boarding procedure and learn why the Columbia River system is so important to the economic well-being of our region. This experience is not available to the public. It must be arranged at a mutually convenient time.
That's cool.
They don't call the bar the graveyard of the Pacific for nothing. The bar pilots do remarkable work out there, and this is the actual boarding of the bar pilot to bring the ship back across and into the mouth of the Columbia, where then the river pilot takes over and brings the ship up to Portland. So, Co-Chair Devlin, with appreciation for your service to the committee.
That's a great
Thank
present.
You very much.
Did they let him get out of the helicopter?
It has to be really big because I have a really big head.
In response to your question, for the edification of the audience, the pilots are actually dropped by a hoist down onto the deck of the ship, and this is not an insubstantial procedure, and if Co-Chair Devlin doesn't play his cards right, it'll be at night in bad weather, pouring rain.
And Madam Chair, can I just point out, we would never put you in that type of danger, and I find it very strange that the vice chair is trying to put the chair in so much danger. I don't know what type of ambition and conflict of interest she needs to disclose in this gift, but I just, I find myself very concerned. So if I may, from the House side, I think, Madam Kirchner, you came into this position replacing Peter Buckley, who was very well-loved on the House side and very well-respected. And I think you've done, and I believe everybody in the House shares this sentiment, that you have done an absolutely amazing job coming into a session with a monstrous shortfall and some being able to navigate all of the various committees. There were committees that you weren't on, that you showed up anyways and participated in. And I know it was frustrating at times, you know, I mean, especially dealing with the Senate, and you have to talk slowly because it's just, you know, they can't hear. And, you know, except with the exception of the good Senator Jackie Winters, boy, she is the, you know, without Jackie Winters, good Senator Winters, I mean, I don't know where they would be. But with that said, you did a phenomenal job. And these budgets aren't the perfect budgets in the world. And we've made some very difficult decisions, which the ability to come into this role and step up and, quite frankly, fill the shoes, you know, as full as you have and beyond has truly been amazing. I know that all of us have really enjoyed working with you on the Senate side. No, Senator Thompson.
She gets to pilot the helicopter.
He did get her a gift, but I like to talk. I like to sound my own voice. So.
I could have told you that. I really did those by the hour. Or by the quarter.
By the word.
See, and here is our point. If you would like to open it in front of the entire committee.
And in front of the public?
Why not? We're on camera. There's like one person watching us right now. So...
Yes. It's a hat.
Good guess.
Oh, I hope it's a big one.
Well, while I'm opening this...
Maybe we shouldn't. It could be very disappointing.
Can we tell the committee about our quote board?
Are we still on the record?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we are.
Can we tell them about our quote board?
Yeah.
When Senator Devlin and I first started meeting with Mr. Rocco and LFO staff in what one reporter dubbed the war room, I got up just spontaneously one day, and Senator Devlin had said something profound a long time ago.
Profane?
Yeah.
Profound or profane?
And I got up and wrote it on the board, and it was a quote. "This will be a memorable session." So I wrote it on the board. And then after that, a few days later, he said something that I thought was pretty hilarious. And so I wrote it on the board. And so we started this board of quotes.
That was probably if you want a friend, get a dog.
That's what he told me. If you want a friend, get a dog. So that's on the quote board.
I just want to put on the record that I just got a text from Margaret Doherty, good old representative. She says, "I am the one person watching."
Senator Mona Sanderson has been texting me. She's watching too.
And my husband is texting.
It is a Pendleton blanket. So.
Thank you all.
Oh, we're cheapskates over here.
Thank you.
Better than a hat and a chance at death.
I know that Senator Devlin always wants the last word, but I do have the gavel tonight, and I will call on you again. But I want to be sure. I don't see, like, five dozen LFO staff standing, happens often. But, Mr. Rocco, you're still in the room.
Yeah,
Mr. Rocco, to you and all of your fabulous, fine staff in the Legislative Fiscal Office, sincere thanks for everything.
And in those same regards, I want to thank each and every one of you for your service on this committee. I know that there have been issues at times. I hope that you had some pleasure in serving on this committee. But I would like to echo the remarks of my co-chair in the sense I regret that Mr. Rocco has left. I have worked with Mr. Rocco now for a very long time and the remaining analysts. And I would hope, as good as the applause was here, all of those analysts will come to our respective floors on the final day of the session. And I hope you would encourage people to really recognize the hard work that they do, because we work many long hours. They work even longer hours than we work. We go home on weekends, most weekends. The last several weeks, they have not gone home. So I wish we would really recognize that. And even though we have our disagreements about policy and disagreements about budget priorities, I would hope that you would know that I respect each and every one of you.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. I think we're all probably ready to go home.
Yeah.
We don't know if we'll have another formal meeting. Thank you all very much for tonight. We are just in recess.
We have a wheelchair waiting for you when you get off the committee.
Where's my gift? Where's my gift?